just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies.
What's up, everybody? It's Owen. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I wanted to, before we get started today on this podcast with Joe Calero, I wanted to let everybody know that if you like J.D. Scroggin as a guest on this podcast, we actually, J.D. and I, have been doing a weekly podcast called Hurricane and Scroggs. You can also find that on Fansmanship.com, iTunes, Stitcher, etc. Feel free to take a look at it. We hope you enjoy that one as well. This podcast is with Joe Calero, of course, Cal Poly men's basketball coach. Cal Poly had their first NCAA tournament appearance in Division I last season. And so I talked to Coach Calero about what the outlook is for this year, who's going to take the place of a player like Chris Eversley and a leader like Jamal Johnson on the team, what the Big West looks like, and so I hope you enjoy this conversation. Again, it's Joe Calero, Cal Poly head basketball coach, and this is the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Half money, half hard, smoking up the track with my homie from the Merck Park. I'm 805, raised 209, repping 310, living, giving praise like it's Thanksgiving.
So, Coach, what was this offseason like for you? A little shorter than previous offseasons, which is good. Maybe a week shorter than other off seasons, which is I'm sure how you'd prefer it, but kind of describe from that last game at Wichita, and kind of what did you do to either get away or to take advantage of the momentum that the program had at the end of the season there.
Well, I clearly have to say that it was one of the best off seasons of my life. It actually reminded me quite a bit from my junior college coaching days. We won the Northwest Junior College Championship, and we had, you know, the 4 or 5 months in between time that we had been champions to the time that we started preparing to, you know, defend a championship. And, you know, as a coach, you do need to take some time and smell the roses when they occur. And then we had a great spring and an opportunity to, you know, do some recruiting. We ended up with Luke Meikle, a Gonzaga transfer, and I think the fact that we went to the NCAA tournament got Luke excited enough to say Cal Poly's an upcoming program, and this is a place that he can be successful and be happy and enjoy that. And then, for me personally, you know, it's I've got a 15-year-old daughter, and my wife and I we had a chance to, you know, do a few more things in August. You know, we're very busy in May and June, and then recruiting on the road throughout July, but in August, we were able to get out of town, and get up to Lake Chelan. I had a week away with some my family members and a mini family reunion. It's not a full family reunion; that'd be too out of control. But that was real rewarding, just to have that week together in August, and then, you know, kind of get back into town, and then it's you know we hit it, and the team's back here in September, so we're back at it now. And now we're clearly moving beyond last year, and once you have a practice and you realize that you got games and you get nervous about how much work we have to be competitive again, I'm back to being a nervous, neurotic coach.
Yeah. Last off season, I think with a number of assistant coaching changes, there was probably some I don't know about unknown, but there was maybe some additional work to do. How do you keep things fresh with the same coaches that come back this year? Obviously, continuity is always perceived as a really good thing, but how do you kind of try to develop yourself and other people in the off season as well in terms of being the leader of that staff?
Well,
that group?
It's a really good question, because I kind of forgot last year that we had the coaching changes. We had the two new coaches coming in, and or not necessarily coming in, but actually Coach Lau was new on staff. Mm-hmm. And Coach Fortier new on staff, and then Coach Reeves moved up to being a recruiter on the road, right. And Coach Kirby was getting into his third year. So, you know, what was great about this summer was the fact that it was the first time that we were able to build any continuity. And Coach Fortier and I, and as he's an associate head coach, we're so much more on the same page as far as how assertive I want him, how aggressive I want him. I think he's an outstanding candidate to be a Division I head coach in the near future. And a quality basketball brain, but even a better person and mentor for student athletes in their program. And so, you know, I what I did is I have to do to grow our program. I have to continue to delegate. I've got to be able to leave and spend more time on the road recruiting, spend more time on the road fundraising, spend more time on the road and program development and personal, development where I get a chance to meet with other coaches and expand my knowledge and professionalism. And, you know, I plan on coaching another 10 to 15 years. God willing, that's the plan. I love what I do, and I want to stay on top of it. So having some continuity means that I get a chance to kind of continue to develop and develop our team and expand the delegation role.
Yeah, you kind of described the networking thing and you know, talking to other coaches and getting to know other guys. Is that something that comes into play when you go and look at a transfer that comes in? In the Big West, there are transfers that come in from time to time. You mentioned Luke, it's Meikle, right? Yeah, you mentioned Luke Meikle from Gonzaga. You guys are playing Gonzaga this year. Things like that have to come on some level from personal relationships with coaches. Obviously, you're from Washington, and that's helpful too. But it benefits the program overall too, right, when you do that kind of stuff?
Well, it does. And I think the biggest thing is that you just look at is in the profession, it's just longevity. I mean, it's hard to have a lot of deep relationships or communicate with people that you've known for a year or two. But, you know, we know somebody for 10, 15, 20 years. You know, people are just a phone call away from getting information and sharing information and developing each other's programs and looking at what works and so forth. And so the opportunity to play Gonzaga and Battle of Seattle in Seattle, it's a marquee marketing opportunity for us. I mean, it's a very, if you're not from the Northwest, you understand that the game will be publicized on a variety of TV games and so forth. So, you know, ringing the bell over and over, Cal Poly, from a West Coast branding perspective. And when you're recruiting, yeah, we're playing in the Battle of Seattle against Gonzaga, and then we're playing at Cal, and we've got the Cal St. Mary's trip in which we're in the Bay Area with Pacific leaving the conference. We're really on the Bay Area for one game, and it's UC Davis. So we thought it was critical that we get back into that market for the Bay Area recruiting. That's why we're playing USF this year, and we're playing Santa Clara up there this year, because we need to be in where our alumni base is and where our recruiting base is.
Yeah. I want to get back to that, you know, the traveling thing, because I think that's maybe a narrative coming in terms of being road warriors again. But I want to get to the team too. You know, last season you came into the beginning of the season knowing essentially what you had from at least a few guys, especially Chris Eversley coming in. You know, you could kind of count on him being the guy, both, you know, leading both, you know, vocally and every other way, really. This year, who's that player that maybe maybe didn't see as much in the offseason? They came back and you said, okay, this guy's made some tangible kind of strides. It's one of the things I really like about college sports and being around them, is that you can see guys one year to the next progress over 4 years. At least some players, you can really see like tangible differences and changes in their game. Is there anybody on your team who you had that reaction to after this offseason and coming back into practice now for the first few weeks?
Yeah, two guys jump off the page. I mean, we're very confident that Malik Love and Ridge Shipley are going to do a more than admirable job at the point guard position. They're going to do a great job. They're proven entities. They can handle the ball, make plays. So we like that. The two guys who've made big strides and will be impact players for us this year, and we also, David Waba, we know David's going to attack the rim and dunk on you and that type of stuff. But Joel Allwich was in behind Chris Eversley, kind of in the shadow of Chris. And Chris was such a outgoing, dominant personality that Joel took his place behind him. Joel has had dominating practices at times where he's scored three straight baskets, block shots, rebounds, run the floor. And Mike Bolden. Mike was behind David a little bit, and now his opportunity to really shine both sides of the ball. His defensive acumen and his ability to get hands, deflect, get steals, he's doing it every day in practice right now. Much more confident shooting the ball and driving the ball. He drove baseline the other day and dunked in a crowd. And so those two guys have the athletic ability. They have the commitment level. They have the focus, the maturity. And they're going to take up a lot of that the missing space that we need to be taken up, because we really are hurting right now with our depth at the post. Losing Zach Gordon was very, very difficult for us because he was expected to play, compete for a starting spot. Brian Bennett's had a very slow start to the fall again with injuries. And so that always holds back his conditioning level, as he's already got some foot issues and some ankle sprains. And so we've had to rely already on Anthony Silvestri and Alex Abrams, a freshman who we ideally would have liked to have redshirted with Zach and Brian being healthy. So he's getting thrown in the fire as a freshman. He's going to have to play some big minutes for us early this year, if not all this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask who that guy might be who plays like maybe like a Jordan Lewis or even a Drake Uyu role in terms of like being kind of a swing guy, a guy that can play kind of those multiple positions, maybe even play a four if you need to it sometimes if you go small. Is Michael, I mean, it's nice to hear Michael's doing really well. Is he that kind of a swing, maybe more between two and three, but kind of more of a swing guy, a long guy, can get some rebounds, that kind of thing?
I think the fix it long guy is going to be Joel, which I think Mike's really going to be limited to the two and three. We're not going to be able to get him into that four spot. Actually, the guy who could always play four for us is Malik Love. That guy can play the one, two, three, and four for us, and he could go guard somebody 220 pounds and be happy and do a heck of a job.
Yeah, as a freshman, he was overpowering other point guards in the conference. So, yeah, for sure. Okay, I can picture that for sure. The conference is improving, too. You look at the conference and the teams that are in the Big West right now, and you know you're going to have your Long Beach there. Maybe they lost somebody. I don't. Lamb and Caffey. It seems like they've been there forever, especially Caffey. You got Santa Barbara, Alan Williams as a senior,
returning conference player of the year.
You got Irvine, who was one of the more deeper, more talented teams. They returned Alex Young and Mamadou Njai and guards galore. That's not even to mention the two teams that played for the title last year, which is you guys and Northridge, and Northridge is certainly not getting any worse either. What's that like for you in terms of trying to keep up and kind of it's good for the conference, right? I mean, what's that like for you in the off season in terms of planning and managing for the competition you're going to be playing, and it's got to be good for the conference that it's so deep. Is it as deep as it's ever been, in your opinion?
Well, I'm starting my sixth year here at Cal Poly, and I would look at the conference right now, and based upon what I hear from what other people are reporting, that it's the most talent they've seen in the conference, and that we have a chance maybe to have somebody win 20 games at preseason and have enough success that if somebody knocked them off, we're starting to be in the consideration of being a two-bid conference and getting a second team into the NCAA tournament. But one of the things I have learned starting my 28th year of coaching is I have no control over those other teams. I don't know. I don't do a very good job of following the other teams. Okay. I purposely try not to get on their websites. I don't read. I think my assistant coaches do a really good job of it. But as the head coach, I think that my energy, my focus, my enthusiasm, and my fears has got to be on the things that I can control, and that's our guys and our guys in the weight room and our guys in their discipline and our guys in their and if they're shooting and working out and they have academic focus and what's going on with somebody else can't be controlled from us. And so I'm asked to, put teams in order who I think's going to win this and that. And I say, I'm the worst at it. I mean, I'm the worst because I put more time than I think maybe sometimes that's necessary focusing on what I can control, which is my team and my guys, our offense, our defense. And finally, when we get to scouting report 2-3 days beforehand, my assistant coach will tell me who's healthy, who's eligible, what offense they run, what defense run. I say, okay, here's how we're going to attack it then. Sure. So it keeps me somewhat healthy that way by not worrying or looking at anybody else's players.
You got enough to worry about on your own, for sure. That being said, coming back to your team, who's the newcomer who didn't play last year, who's maybe most likely to make an impact on your team this year? And you have a few transfers, you have a few people who can play right away or not. Who's that newcomer maybe this year that maybe has the best chance to kind of get in the mix and make an impact?
Well, I got a real surprise name for you. He's a newcomer because you haven't seen him much for the last 2 years. Reese Morgan. I think we can call Reese a newcomer, although he's 29 years old, it seems like. He's been here starting his fourth year. He's a redshirt junior that's had three knee surgeries during his career, but he's practicing consistently with us right now without a knee brace on. And he's just got sleeves, and in the last couple of days, he's had some practices that we all go, wow, There's a shot he made. There's a defensive play. There's a rebound he got. There's some maturity. He settles down everybody else. So if we can get quality minutes out of Reese Morgan, I think we have an outstanding backcourt. Yeah. The other kid right behind him that's making shots and plays is Taylor Sutliff. And Taylor, as a freshman last year, was buried pretty deep on the bench. But now we're seeing some real bright signs out of him right now that we think show that he can get some minutes for us as well.
Yeah, do you have to manage Reese like a 35-year-old NBA player? What's his like health status like?
Wow, you just said the exact when the word is manage him and treat him like he's 35. I told him, Reese, no matter how well you play right now, you're not starting. I said, because then you have to start during practice, and that's too many reps. And so I said, you're going to be the super sub, and we're going to limit your minutes in practice until that knee is, you know, we just don't need to blow the miles up on that. We minimize the miles on his knee so he's available. And he'll, you know, even practicing half or three quarters of practice will be plenty for him. He knows how to play.
Sure.
He knows how to shoot. He knows how to compete. We just need to get and keep him healthy.
And and wind-wise in shape, too. I'm sure there's, like, a balance there. So are you looking at – I mean, obviously you'll play with rotations the whole beginning of the year. Are you looking at having Malik and Ridge on the court together at times, or are they going to be kind of your point guard rotation that way?
Yeah, that's absolutely a plan. We've done it a number of times in practice. You know, most – I'd say two out of three practices we have Malik pitted against Ridge, and it's great for them. But every third practice we do play them together, and then we move maybe Kyle Toth into the point guard spot, or Reese, or Taylor Sutliff play a little point guard. Yeah. And when Malik and Ridge play together, we have two guys who really can attack the hoop, and they really complement each other. They like playing with each other. We have no problems playing both together. So that'll definitely be a part of our game plan.
For sure. And I want to talk about Ridge. You know, he hit that shot in the Big West tournament, and really kind of the second half of conference play, really became a guy that you guys could go to at the end of the shot clock. I remember watching the Riverside game at Riverside on Big West TV, and he was really the only guy who was doing much offensively in that game for you guys. What's the next step for him? What does that look like for a point guard like him to be kind of the next step of effectiveness and consistent and so forth?
Well, Ridge knows that this program is based upon, you know, taking care of the basketball. We've been nationally ranked the top, as high as number 2 and as low as number 15 in the nation as far as our assist turnover ratio goes, or fewest turnovers per night. But it's also defensive focused, and Ridge has already made huge strides. We know he's a great ball handler, can create his own shot, can find a guy and pass. That's why we recruited him. But to be an all-conference candidate in the future, to get back to the NCAA tournament, Ridge has got to be a defender. He's got to be able to guard the ball. That's why he's guarding Malik in practice. But he also got to be a great off-ball defender. I look at Casper Ware, the old little point guard from Long Beach State who's playing in the NBA now. What he does, he disrupts the game from the defensive end too. He was conference player of the year defensively. And I thought that was amazing for a 5'10" point guard. And Ridge at 5'11", 6', however tall he wants to say he is, needs to become a great, gritty defender and make those plays off the ball, digging out the post, reading what's going on in passing lanes. And he's already shown a commitment to that. So I'm really pleased with the direction he's gone on that already.
Yeah, and Ridge is also seems like a pretty confident guy, maybe a vocal guy sometimes, I don't know. You've talked about senior leadership in the past being super important, and you have 3 or 4 seniors this year. None of them are super vocal or you know, they don't seem like anyway. I mean, I don't know, maybe I don't see them in practice or in every day. They seem like kind of quiet, unassuming guys a lot of the time when you kind of go down the list. And then some of the younger guys might be the guys who might be a little bit more vocal and kind of, I don't even know the word, boisterous, outgoing maybe. I don't know how to describe it, because I wouldn't call the other guys not outgoing. But how does that mix in terms of personality? How much control do you have over kind of the personality on the court, at least? And is there like an ideal mix that way that you think about as a coach? Like, just random question. But.
Well, I look at it consistently. Every team has a different personality.
Sure.
And this year's team, I've told them a number of times, we're very analytical. We're very stoic at times. We're very Tim Duncan-ish. We have guys that, Malik doesn't change his expression a lot. Anthony Silvestri has a little bit more emotion than Malik. But Michael Bolden, he's done a great job of becoming a much more outgoing talker on defense. He's kind of getting us some energy when we're on the defensive end. But there's an implied leadership, an implied responsibility. Even Alberto Gannis, he's a senior walk-on from Italy who's a 4.0 student, and he adds a maturity. He's 24 years old. Right. He adds a maturity to the team that says, you know, leadership comes from a lot of different ways, how you act, maybe what you don't say sometimes, you know, how you dress in situations, you know, just kind of how you carry yourself in the locker room and how you carry yourself off the court. And I think those kind of leadership qualities, you know, there's implied verbal leadership, but leadership can come from so many different ways. And those guys are just going to be different types of leaders. They're not going to be the way Chris Eversley led, which you could tell he was, you know, pumped up and excited. Jamal Johnson was a little general. He was talking and pointing and directing people all the time. So that's just one way to lead. And I think it's great that we have, you know, four mature leaders and seniors. But behind them is our guys that know what they got to do to be successful. And Reese Morgan has been here 4 years. Joe Alwich has been here 4 years. Ridge Shipley and David both understand what it takes to get to the NCAA tournament. So I love kind of the personality we have right now because it is very even keel. And my favorite word to use in all of coaching is emotional stamina. You got to be able to ride through the highs and the lows. I don't care as a coach, an assistant coach, a fan, or the players. Don't quit. Just keep on grinding it away, and that's why we're honoring, I just want to work this into the conversation, we're honoring the 1994-95 team, the first team to be Division I. They finished the year with 9 players. We're going to honor them in December this year because they never quit. And that set the precedence for us to get the NCAA tournament this last season. Somebody had to be the first. Yeah. And they really struggled to win-loss record, but they never struggled in their commitment to each other, the university. And that's why we're going to honor them this coming year, is that their leadership had to persevere through times that were the most difficult.
Yeah, you talked about emotional stamina, I think, last year, especially early on in the season. You talked about David especially in terms of being able to maintain some emotion or being, you know, having to manage his minutes early in terms of that. What's his next step? I saw a thing on a website the other day, and it listed, you know, the top four, you know, the all-conference first, second, third, preseason, first, second, third, fourth teams. David was the guy from Cal Poly who was on those teams. And so, you know, what's his next step to be that guy who can be an all-conference guy? What do you need out of him this year to be successful?
Well, unfortunately, it's a real sad question to ask me right now because the number one thing we need from David is to get healthy. Okay. He had surgery on his wrist about 6 weeks ago. At the end of the summer, he was trying to nurse a wrist injury that just wasn't healing, and he finally got to a specialist after 4 to 6 weeks of just trying to see if it would heal on his own, and they decided they're going to need surgery. So he's had surgery on his wrist in late August, and now 6 weeks later, he went for a checkup, and they've told me he needs another 4 weeks. So he's doubtful for the opening game against Nevada in our homestand. And David was being an animal in the weight room. His body was stronger. He's developed a lot on his jump shot this spring. It was looking great this summer.
Is it his right or left wrist?
It is his right wrist, which is his shooting arm. Yeah. We think in the long run this is going to help David's overall game because his left hand has developed a lot. His ball handling in his left hand is dramatically improved because it's been in a cast for 6 weeks already and will be for another 4 weeks. So that's going to delay his shooting. It's going to delay his driving. It's going to delay his aggressiveness. And so number one thing for David to be functionally an impact guy by conference play is the expectations for us and Dave of during the preseason are going to be minimal. We just got to get him in shape, try to get him healthy, try to get him on the court. Yeah. Hopefully we have a good David in January and February, and we have a great David by the time we hit the conference playoffs if we get there and do what we can do again.
Yeah. In general, does the Big West tournament and winning it and going to the NCAA tournament and winning a game, does that make your job easier, harder, just different, the same? Like, what kind of a difference does that make, like in an off season, like you've just had?
Winning is good. winning helps.
I'm not asking
you
to complain about it, but
getting to the NCAA tournament, it doesn't make my job easier. It just makes it more enjoyable because we can talk about the success. It helps with fundraising. It helps with the recruiting. We've already got great commitments from a couple of kids that we can't talk about publicly until signing date. But we did get the Gonzaga transfer, and he's in school. So I think that winning is critical to the existing players too, because they know what kind of work and commitment that was going to take. But then the demands on my time increase as well. I mean, the number of people have asked to speak publicly or visit this group or be involved in that group, that increases. So my time, things don't get easier as far as my time goes. I'm getting pulled in a lot of directions, which I love, but it's still quite demanding that way. And I think that's an important part that I got to remember, that success is an opportunity then to promote Cal Poly in the county of San Luis Obispo.
Yeah. How important is that around here? Like I asked you about that, I think a couple of years ago even, but you know, it's a small county, it's a smaller area. Your guys' attendance, you know, despite a regular season record that you maybe didn't like at the end of last Big West season, attendance didn't really dip a ton towards the end of the year. I mean, there were still a lot of students. The UC Irvine game, there were a ton of students. The Santa Barbara game at the end of the year, there's a ton of people here. You know, they kind of stuck with you guys last year during the end of the year when your record wasn't even 500. What does that mean? And what's kind of an important part about engaging the local fan base here? What's the key to it in your estimation?
I think first of all, I think we're out in the community. I think the coaching staff's out in the community on a regular basis. And our team's out in the community, and our team represents himself well when they're in the community, whether it's down at the market on Thursday or whether it's out having dinner or wherever. I think our guys are approachable guys. I think when you come to a game, you see guys that work hard and play hard together, and then they'll clap for each other, and they stand up, and they enjoy the support they get, and they appreciate the support they get. And I think that we learned a lot from success that the soccer program had as far as drawing crowds. I think that people will appreciate winning, but they appreciate, you know, sincerity, and they appreciate hard work, and they appreciate guys that are humble. And they can reach the guys that are out there and that are approachable and that will have youth camps. You know, we have 160, 70 kids at our basketball camp in the summer down in the south end of the county. We do a camp down in Napomo High School every year. So our guys come out and work that at the Joe Calero Basketball Camp. Go to joecalerobasketball.com for more information on camp information. Shameless plug.
Yeah, that's
shameless,
all right. That's all right. You're allowed.
So I think all of that contributes to being approachable. And I think then that you feel like, hey, I know those guys. I want to support those guys through thick and thin. Yeah. And then things got thin. Yeah. And then when we had success, they were there to enjoy it and jump on the bandwagon and enjoy the journey to the tourney last year.
Yeah, it was a fun one. One of the last questions I want to ask is about the schedule. You mentioned going to St. Mary's. You mentioned going to Gonzaga, Cal, San Francisco, Nevada. I'm sure I'm missing some.
Santa Clara, sorry,
yeah. So those are a lot of road games, but they're road games that seem eventually returnable. I don't know how many of them actually are. But what's the ideal in terms of like a home road schedule? Is it, in some ways, I imagine it is kind of ideal to go challenge yourself away and to kind of forge yourself through fire, especially, you know, with young teams or teams that have Big West aspirations. But is there a little bit more balance that you'd like to eventually see, or is this kind of the plan?
A little bit more balance would be ideal. We have Fresno State as well on the schedule. Fresno State will return the game next year. We go to Chicago, and we'll play Indiana, Fort Wayne, right. Indiana, Purdue, Fort Wayne, and they'll come back, return the game. So we already have them on schedule for next year. December 3rd and the 5th of next year, we'll have two games against Fort Wayne and Fresno State to get home games there. But the other games, you know, are opportunities for us to create brand opportunity, and also, you know, it helps our budget dramatically.
Sure.
I mean, we need the resources, what we call guarantee games, where they give us large checks, and we can be in the areas we want to be and play against the teams that we want to play against, and we get paid pretty well for that, which is significant. We take a European trip this year. And we'll be going to Paris if all things work out and for a week, and then we have week training, and that's a pretty penny. And so these games pay for, you know, some of that opportunity. We snuggle some of that money away, so we have that able to pay for our trip.
Well, I mean, you played at four Pac-12 schools last year. I mean, you know, that adds up right over time.
Yeah, it's critical that we play those games to do that. And again, this year, the games that we're getting paid for are a big part of our program. Even Nevada we had here last year, so we have to go repay from there. We'll get some revenue from that as well. So I think next year we'll have four home games and eventually look at five. But I think it's important we play in the large venues. It's important we play the big national brand names for recruiting, for identity, for playing against the elite talent so that you can get really used to playing against, I said our conference that you mentioned, conferences continues to improve. We got to continue to have a difficult preseason. I'm just not one that sits there and just looks this as like, oh, let me see how many games we can win. It's not about how many games you win. It's how good are you going to be at the end of the year. And I think that the more adversity your team faces, if you can have the emotional stamina I claim that's so critical, you go through that, and if you don't pack it in, you're going to be better. You're just going to get better if you play better teams and you play in bigger venues and you have more exposure. I think that's going to be a relatively consistent approach I have. I'd like to have at least four preseason home games a year. This year we only have three. I think next year we for sure have four. We're working on trying to get a fifth one as well.
Got it. Joel Awich, you mentioned, and I think he's a super interesting study this year in terms of just for fans to watch. I see him at football games or wherever, doing his security guard thing or whatever. He looks a little bigger. He put on some weight, it looks like, in the offseason. He told me only 3 or 4 pounds, but it looks more like, he looks like he's stronger, not bigger like a bunch of mass, bigger like in the arms and shoulders. How important is that for him to play like significant minutes for you guys this year? He seems like a guy, especially with David out, and I didn't know he was out for that long before I came in here, but especially with David out, he's got to be a guy that can put the ball in the basket for you guys, right? I mean, he's got to be a guy who can be looked to for that.
Yeah, David's already had, in the first 2 weeks of practice that we've seen our guys on a regular basis now, David has had outstanding practices. His endurance, his strength, his
Joel?
Definition. Joel has had outstanding practices. Yeah. With the replacement of David, as you'd mentioned, he's scoring it off the dribble. He's catching the ball on the wing and he's attacking as a four-man. He's attacking guys off the bounce and getting to the free throw line. We do scrimmages in practice that are based upon making three hoops, whether it's a free throw, a two-pointer or a three-pointer. Any bucket's considered that. It's first to three. And he, one game, got to the free throw line, two out of the three, and then hit a post-up turnaround fadeaway off the glass banker as well. So he's showing the versatility that great scorers can score three ways: perimeter, post-up, and free throw line. And the thing I like most about Joel right now is his ability to get to that free throw line so that he can be a double-digit scorer for us. And we keep him healthy, we're going to see double-digit points out of him on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, and the three games you played against Santa Barbara last year, I pointed this out at the time, two of them you started Joel at the four, and those are the two games that you guys won. It seems like he's really versatile on both sides of the ball potentially, and him being an upperclassman will be interesting to watch this year. Anything else you want to add today? Anything else going on?
Well, yeah, I just want to touch bases because I don't know when this is going to be released about, but our green and gold scrimmage next Saturday, on Saturday the 25th, I believe that is.
That's before the first Montana or Montana State football game, right?
Exactly. So this Saturday, it's at 4:00. We'll have a scrimmage at 4:00. Six or seven guys on each team, and it's a good preview before the football game. And then when that wraps up about 5:00, the guys that are still healthy will have a little bit of dunk contest, and that should be fun. And that'll give you a chance to still have about 45 minutes to get down to the football game and grab something to eat and everything else. So hope to see some people out there this coming Saturday, and our poster schedules and pocket schedules and that type of stuff should be completed by next Saturday, and we'll be getting those out. So bring the kids, bring grandma, bring the dog. Let's get on out to Cal Poly basketball games.
And then you can go to the football game right after. Yeah, it's super easy. Speaking of the dunk contest, I wanted to bring this up, and you talked about it at the banquet. Max Vikowski is a guy who had fun at in the pregame, dunk lines, during the season last year. I got a couple of pretty fun pictures of him throwing down. But there's legends about him in the weight room this offseason, and maybe there have been for a while. But there's like records he's chasing. There's all kinds of stuff going around in terms of Max and lifting. Tell me about Max and his impact.
My new nickname for Max is Max Out. because he maxes out on everything he does, and so much so that this off season we had a great meeting, and he has now moved away from the basketball team full time, and he's now an assistant strength and conditioning coach for the basketball team. So he's already concentrating on his career to be a strength conditioning coach and a basketball trainer. So he works with our guys. He did a great job this summer working at with Malik Love on a speed and quist and explosiveness, and he'll be working with our guys that are either injured or when we're on the road that are redshirting with Luke and with Zach staying back during the preseason activities, and so. He's committed to being a strength conditioning guy and saw the opportunity to become more focused in that. And so he's already gained, over the last year, I believe, 25 pounds, wow. 20 to 25 pounds, increased his vertical, his speed, his endurance. And he looks like a triathlete or a biathlete, triathlon star or something a decathlete, whatever.
Right. So he's a guy, he's a guy who might have as big an impact, helping your guys stay healthy, working with Holder down there and in that department. Okay, that gives me a good picture. Anybody else or anything else I should have a good picture for on the way out besides coming out to the green and gold?
No, at this point in time, we all coaches think of the same thing. Please pray for good health for everybody, not just basketball teams, but everybody else out there. And, it's a interesting time in our society with so much going on and so forth. And, I think basketball is a great distraction. We know our place in society, but the reality is, anytime a kid gets hurt, I say, well, it's not just about basketball. You remember that young man or young lady that got hurt, it's part of their dream goes on hold. And it's frustrating for fans and coaches, but think how frustrating it is for the athlete that works all year long and just have an injury derail them. So, we always want to have, good health for everybody and on all teams. Yeah. We'd hate to see anybody get hurt from any team. So hope that takes care of itself, and then we go ahead and kick the season off, or as I like to correct everybody, tip the season off, because basketball has a tip-off, football has the kickoff.
Thanks, Coach. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up to bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to troubled town. I can't find my way around troubled town. Signs out on